Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley, joined by Greg Barnes and Jason Staples. You're listening to the Game Plan podcast from Inside Carolina, sponsored by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. I'll get the Johnny T-Shirt a little bit later, but if you haven't been going there, you need to check that place out. Great place to get your Carolina gear. Guys, it's the Game Plan podcast, so let's jump right into it. I'm going to mix it up. I usually go to Greg. Jason, I'm going to come to you first. Talking a little bit off air, Carolina's preparing for a Virginia offense that presents a quarterback that can do everything. My question first is it a pretty similar game plan that Jay Bateman devised for Duke that he'll need to put together for Virginia? If so, why? If not, why not?
You know, actually, I don't think it's exactly the same game plan this week as it was last week, because in a lot of ways, it's very similar, but it's not exactly the same, because even though the quarterback skill sets are somewhat similar, actually very similar, it's just Perkins is better. The wide receiver position is pretty significantly different between the two places. And to me, what you're going to want to do with Virginia is you want to pack the line of scrimmage both against the run and against the pass. We talked last week that with Duke, you wanted to force them to have to throw the ball down the field in that intermediate area, even some of the short stuff, but don't give up any big plays in the passing game, and then do everything you can to stuff the running game and then take away the big plays in the passing game. With Virginia hasn't created any big plays all year in the passing game. They are as vertically challenged in the passing game as any team on North Carolina's schedule. To me, what you do with Virginia is you do the same thing trying to stop the run, no doubt. But then you also basically make the deal that we're willing to give up a couple big plays in the passing game. And I know that sounds crazy, but I'm willing to give up a couple big plays in the passing game to try to smother all the underneath stuff and all of the, let's say, 5 yards past the line of scrimmage to about 15 yards past the line of scrimmage, or just anything under 15 yards. I want to challenge everything in the passing game. They get nothing free, because that's where they make their living. If you force them to have to throw the football more than really even 10 yards down past the line of scrimmage, 10 yards downfield, and their efficiency just falls off a cliff. So if you can do the same thing against the run and then force them to throw over you a little bit, you basically are saying, we don't think you can beat us over the top. And if you do, we'll take the one or two plays that you might be able to get in exchange for a bunch of three and outs and maybe a turnover. That's what you're willing to do. So it's a little bit different in that regard, just because they're not very good. And I'll pull out a couple numbers a little bit later in the podcast, but they're just not very good at creating big plays in the passing game, both because Perkins doesn't throw it real well, and also even more so because they just don't have the wide receivers that scare you downfield.
Greg, so when Jason's talking about that, the importance of health in that defensive backfield is going to be relevant Saturday night. And Mac Brown talked about how they were able to plug and play DeAndre Hollins, but getting guys back off the injured reserve list or off the shelf as they say sometimes in college football. I mean, that's going to help provide that depth. But even with what Bateman was able to do with guys like Hollins, Greg Ross had some nice plays last week when Storm Duck went down. I mean, Carolina it bodes well for Carolina in pass defense, as Jason's talking about, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think really what it does is it allows Jay Bateman and North Carolina to be more dynamic defensively. And I think when you've got guys that are so inexperienced as they did last week against Duke, you've got to be a little bit careful. Now, give them a lot of credit. They mix things up quite a bit and really did an incredible job of keeping Quentin Harris in the pocket. And he was just a non-factor in the run game. And going in, the message is, hey, we want to make sure that if Harris beats us, it's because he's beating us with his arm. And so they excelled in that. But I think when you get some guys back, that allows you to be a little bit more creative because you have guys that you trust there, especially, if Trey Morrison is able to play at corner, as we expect he will. Now you're talking about a situation where if you need to isolate him and put him on an island to create some havoc on that side of the field, you're okay doing that. You're not going to do that necessarily with Hollins because, even as we saw last week, Cutcliffe threw at him a ton. I think he had the most targets his way with 10 probably, and Duke was successful throwing at him. You're not going to see that as much if Morrison's out there by himself, and so that allows you to be a little bit more aggressive in kind of your scheme. And I think obviously that's going to be more beneficial for North Carolina with what Jay Bateman wants to do. As Jason said, Perkins is a better athlete. He's passing better. He's not a great passer by any stretch. But the fact that he's been dinged up with a knee injury, it'll be interesting to see how much that kind of limits him. But if North Carolina is able to keep him in the pocket, which UNC did not do last year, that'll go a long way in making this kind of a one-sided game. And as Jason said, if you look at the stats in terms of explosive plays, it just isn't there for Virginia this year. They've got 26 plays of 20-plus yards this year. North Carolina has 49. Carolina, number one in the ACC. Virginia, dead last at 14. So you want to make them throw the ball. You have to be careful not to allow explosive plays because that would be really a gift to Virginia. But if you can keep Perkins in the pocket, that's really what you want to do.
I'm going to add in a couple more reinforcing the stats that Greg just brought in. Virginia is 40th in the country in passing plays over 10 yards. 40th in the country. They've got 80. For perspective, North Carolina is 11th in the country in passing plays over 10 yards at 97. Here's where things change, though. 30-plus yard passing plays. Virginia drops to 98th. They've got 8. So 1 out of 10 of Virginia's pass plays on the year have gone for more than 30 yards. That's a pretty significant difference. North Carolina's got 14 and they're 29th, so not quite as explosive relative to their production at plus 10 yards or 10 plus yards, but a whole lot more explosive than Virginia in that department. And again, Virginia, and the more you go, the bigger the plays go, the further down the stats, further down the national rankings, Virginia falls. So like I said, top 40, they're number 40 in 10-plus yard completions, 98th as soon as you get to 30. Make them, you take away that 10-yard stuff. Come up and tackle hard, press them, find ways to force them to have to make those throws that are 30 yards down the field. And you feel like if you're Jay Bateman, you're coming into this game and saying, if I can get them to have to attempt balls that are going to travel 15, 20 yards in the air, I'm getting a lot. My defense is coming off the field a lot.
Tommy, and while we're on the topic of kind of the passing game, I thought this was an interesting stat. Virginia has thrown the ball actually more than North Carolina has this year in terms of targets, according to Pro Football Focus. We've harped a lot on the drops that North Carolina's had. UNC's got 18 drops. Virginia only has 2. And so when you're able to eliminate the mistakes, you can get away with not being as explosive and not being as efficient. Now, they're still not great by any stretch in the passing game, but by being very clean, you can make up for some of those deficiencies.
Yeah, and then, you know, I just pulled up the Pro Football Focus stats on Bryce Perkins as well. He's actually been okay to his outside left. He's 6 of 12 there, got 2 touchdowns and 1 interception. But you know how on Pro Football Focus, and those who are familiar with this, because we do a lot with the Pro Football Focus stats at Inside Carolina, so you're probably familiar with this if you're listening to this. The red numbers are bad, and the green numbers are good. So Bryce Perkins is red downfield. So 20 plus yard throws, he's red between the numbers and to the outside right, and yellow to the outside left. Just not very good. Outside right and between the numbers, downfield, 20 plus yard throws, he's 4 of 25 on the season. 20 plus yards downfield, throwing to his outside right or between the numbers. Now, normally, actually, a right-handed quarterback is going to be a better thrower to the right side. So it's unusual that he's a little bit better thrower downfield when he's throwing to his left. So that's something that Bateman is definitely going to have noticed, that you want to make sure that any downfield stuff, if you're going to play over the top, play over the top to the left. But basically everything 10 yards beyond 10 yards down the field, you see his numbers drop off, especially between the numbers and to his right-hand side. So, I mean, his passer rating, right-hand side, 10 plus yards downfield, 39.9 NFL passer rating. You go 20 plus yards downfield, 39.6 NFL passer rating. That's not getting it done. So force him to make those throws. Take away, he's a 92.2 NFL passer rating on throws that travel less than 10 yards downfield when he's thrown to his right. So there's what you do. Take that away.
And Jason, we're looking at the same page here. So one thing I wanted to ask you, since we're talking about Virginia offense, is with Perkins, you know, most quarterbacks are this way, but some guys have a greater discrepancy, and I think Perkins probably falls in that category. His numbers are pretty starkly different when he's not facing pressure versus when he's under pressure. So my question is, the guys talked last week after playing Harris that you want to make sure you cover your gaps. You want to have controlled rush. And for people listening, what that means is you don't want to just completely rush through the line and try to get up the field, because if you lose contain, that opens up some rushing lanes. Well, how do you possibly get pressure on him while also maintaining contain? It seems like that's a very kind of a juggling act there.
To me, against Virginia, you bring an extra guy. Or you green dog. So if they're going to keep an extra guy in to block a guy that you blitz, you keep a backer responsible for the quarterback who can blitz when he wants, who can, if he sees the lane, he can come up and take it. And Surratt's done that really well all year. That's something that Bateman does a reasonable amount of time, where you'll see a backer who's responsible to match up with, say, the running back in the backfield. And when that back stays in to block, that backer comes. He comes a little bit late, but he's often getting shots on the quarterback. That's what you do. So you make sure that your guys stay disciplined in their rush lanes and do their job. But that's the other thing. Virginia's offensive line is not very good. Virginia's offensive line is not as good as Duke's. So to me, again, bring pressure and then force them to have to throw over the top against that pressure, because you're probably going to get a lot of three and outs out of that. And you're just not afraid. You shouldn't be afraid of them beating you over the top a whole lot in this one. So the thing that concerns you facing Bryce Perkins is he's really hard to get on the ground. He's a big guy. He's 215 pounds. That's what he's listed at. I think he might be a little heavier than that. He is a really strong guy. And you'll see at different points on the film, you'll have him in the grasp in the pocket, and all of a sudden he'll escape. And then he's making that you know, 12-yard pass downfield, 15-yard pass downfield for a first down. That's where he's getting those completions when he is getting those. Or he'll just work his way out, and you'll have somebody that comes up and makes a hit on him, and he'll find a way to dump that ball off. And because you've committed the extra guy, you don't have a guy out there, and that's where they, you know, they'll work those cheapies down the field. But to me, bring this is a team that I would want to bring pressure. I would want to put pressure on that offensive line to have to block me, because I don't think that offensive line is especially good. It's the weakest offensive line they've had under Bronco. They're going to be pretty good in the future. They're just really young, and they've been banged up a little bit. So bring pressure, force them to throw over the top, and make sure you do everything you can to get hits on Perkins and get him to the ground when you do. Because you're right, when he's under pressure, his Pro Football Focus passing grade, 34.3. Put him under pressure. Real simple.
It's interesting. I want to stay on that topic just for a second, but let me talk about Johnny T-Shirt right fast. I mentioned earlier they're our sponsor of this podcast. They're great friends of Inside Carolina. They've got all the swag you need for Carolina. You got Carolina football, Carolina basketball, but they also have Carolina soccer. I watched Carolina women's soccer in the regular season just a few minutes ago, beating Miami down in Coral Gables or wherever Miami is now, and won that game 3-2. They've got soccer jerseys. They've got women's sports stuff. They've got everything you need for Carolina fandom at all sports across the gamut of Carolina sports, and there's a lot of them. JohnnyT-Shirt.com, of course, if you can't make it to Franklin Street, and both places will get you 10% off your order if you're Inside Carolina Premium subscriber. So get that code off the premium message boards and call and get you an order, or order online, or go see them. They'll do it in person. They're great to deal with in person. Great friends of Inside Carolina. Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Let me stick to Bryce Perkins. And, you know, Jason, you talked about getting him on the ground. I'm looking at his stats. He's rushed for 465 yards. He's gained 465 yards, which is a good amount. But he's lost 190. And I know that sacks are in there as well, but this is a guy that can break your back if he gets loose, but he often gets tackled behind the line. So you mentioned the pressure. Is that not the be-all, end-all for North Carolina on this game? Is just key on Bryce Perkins, make him be the guy, make him not be the guy? Or is there somebody else on that offense Carolina needs to be mindful of?
I'm focused almost exclusively on Bryce Perkins. I mean, they've got a couple nice backs. They've got a couple things there, but a couple players that, you know, that can make plays. But he's the straw that stirs the drink. He's the guy you got to worry about. And if you force him to beat you with his arm down the field, then you've got a good chance of winning. If he's able to get comfortable and start completing those passes under 10 yards, if they're able to start getting him on some boots and using some quarterback run game to get some positive yards, and they're able to matriculate the ball down the field slowly, then they got a shot of winning. But that's a team that they have to have things go right. When they're going to have scoring drives, they're going to be eight, nine play scoring drives most of the time. And so don't turn it over, and then force them to beat you with big plays, and odds are you're going to come out okay.
Greg, is there anything that Jay Bateman's shown us thus far this year that says he can't get that accomplished against Virginia, especially given the offensive line issues you guys have already talked about? I mean, he's found a way to frustrate nearly everybody. Wake Forest in the first half, maybe not so much. App State, maybe not, but everybody else, Bateman's found a way of getting effective pressure, getting in the heads of opposing quarterbacks. Any reason to suspect he won't be able to get it done, especially now that he's going to have even more bullets in his gun, Gordon, going into this ball game Saturday night?
Well, look, Bateman's been very good. I don't think there's any doubt about that, especially given the personnel he's working with. I think at times the hype gets a little much just because you haven't seen some really poor performances, like I think Carolina fans have gotten used to. I mean, North Carolina's defense ranks 59th nationally in S&P Plus. I mean, not bad compared to recent standards. That's not necessarily great. So, yeah, he has been productive. He has. I mean, the Clemson game was fantastic. Duke was pretty good until the final drive. And if Duke scores on that final drive from first and goal with the two, the conversation is, how in the world does North Carolina allow a poor Duke defense to march down the field when it matters and scores to win the game? So one poor call, one poor play by Duke, one great play by Chaz Surratt completely flips around that conversation. I think we've pretty much laid out that the Virginia's offense is not great by any stretch. They do have a playmaker at quarterback. He can cause some problems. I think they've got better wide receivers. At least a boy is better than anybody that Duke had. So that's a potential issue. I think Virginia's a better team than Duke is just as a whole, even on the offensive side of the ball. So can Bateman and North Carolina have success defensively? Sure. Have we seen enough to suggest they can? Yeah, of course we have. Can North Carolina completely lock down Virginia and shut them out? I don't know that we've seen enough to really say that can happen. But I do think North Carolina's defense will certainly be able to be effective enough to give the offense the chance to win.
Jason, last question for Carolina on the Carolina defensive side. A lot of the message board posters, and this is for them, they always talk about, you got to put a spy on the quarterback. You got to put a spy on the quarterback. So I haven't really noticed Bateman doing that at all, but he's got some options when Chaz Surratt, even Dominic Ross. Is that a potential way to approach this one to keep Perkins from getting loose with his legs? Because I agree, if he's able to get comfortable and make those plays with his legs, then Carolina's going to be in trouble. Any chance we'll see that sort of approach from Bateman?
I mean, it's an option. It's one of the things you can do. But from what I've seen of Bateman's tendencies and his philosophy, I wouldn't expect a whole lot of it, if any. The thing about spying a quarterback is you're kind of limited in terms of what defenses you're going to do it in. So you might, for example, run a robber or rat type scheme where you're dropping a guy to take care of that short to intermediate middle, and then he's keeping his eyes on the quarterback, and then if the quarterback leaks out of the backfield, then that guy tackles the quarterback. That sort of serves double duty and all that. But generally, if you're gonna have a guy spy, you're letting the quarterback account for a defender who's not doing as much to help you in other ways. And what I've seen from Bateman is that he does a lot of stunting and moving fronts and using good discipline from his defensive line and using movement up front to make it difficult for quarterbacks to have clear running lanes. And this is something actually I learned at the Clemson coaching clinic a couple of years ago. They were talking about how when they had Deshaun Watson, that there were a couple teams, and they mentioned actually Florida State as the one that gave him the most trouble in this regard, that there were a couple of teams that, because of the stunting that they did up front, it made it harder on their quarterback run game, because it just, the quarterback would go to, he'd see the lane, and then there'd be a guy coming into that lane from somewhere else because of the stunt. So it sort of masks where the lane might open up. Now, sometimes with the stunt, on a passing play, you might have a little bit larger lane open up. But again, what I've seen Bateman do more of than, say, spying the quarterback is to have a green dog situation where you have the linebacker who, it might look kind of like he's spying, but he's really matching up against the back in the backfield, or maybe the tight end. And then all that's happened is because he's no longer matching up with that guy in coverage, he's responsible to basically find work, and he's released to go after the quarterback if there's a lane. And that's really what I've seen more from Bateman. I tend to like that approach more because it's a more aggressive approach than the spy. Sometimes, again, if you're playing against a Michael Vick or somebody like that, and you've got a Derwin James or somebody, then maybe that's the thing you do. maybe you bring Derwin James into the box and you kind of work your defense around some robber type stuff and have him become the shadow. But other than that, I like the idea of basically working within the confines of your defense, using movement, using disguise, using some aggressive green dog type philosophy in order to get to the quarterback and close down where those run lanes might develop while not sacrificing a whole lot on the back end or on the front end for that matter. So I don't really expect to see, I mean, I could be surprised here. He could break tendency, but I haven't seen a whole lot of evidence that he's really inclined to use spy concepts all that often.
Get Perkins on the ground and catch it when he throws it to you, because he's thrown 8 interceptions on the season, so he can get a little loose with the football. We're going to take a short break, come back, talk about Carolina's offensive approach against a Virginia defense that's not bad.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
We're back. Inside Carolina Game Plan Podcast. I'm Tommy Ashley, Jason Staples, Greg Barnes. Carolina offense, Greg, has been great at times. It's struggled at times. Sam Howell's been fantastic all year. Virginia's defense is not bad. And if I'm looking at the stats correctly, and it is Halloween night, it's been a long night, Virginia's given up 281 yards a game, which is a full 100 less than North Carolina's. How does Carolina approach this Virginia defense that's it's played well at times? Not so much on the road. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But, Greg, Carolina's offensive approach, Longo, Howell, the running back by committee type approach, how you see Carolina doing it?
Well, I think we set up Virginia talking to offense first, and you're like, God, that does not sound like a very good unit. North Carolina should be in good shape in this game, right? And yet North Carolina is at home in front of a sellout crowd, and it's a 2.5-point favorite. And the reason why is what you mentioned. Virginia's great defensively. They're very good in special teams as well. And so those are probably two phases of the game that tilt in Virginia's favor. Bronco has done a really good job. I find it interesting, and I like Jason's take on this, but a lot of people were concerned when he was hired because he didn't have any East Coast experience coming from BYU. How can he adapt recruiting-wise? And if you look at the rankings, at least initially, first couple of years, they really weren't that impressive. And then he had the whole fiasco, I guess it was not this past summer, but previous year summer, where he's like, yeah, you only got like 26, 27 ACC guys on the roster, blah, blah, blah. But yet, when you watch them, there are a lot of really good players on this defense. Now, it's a big loss losing Bryce Hall, one of the best players in the country, out of the secondary. That hurts. But in listening to Phil Longo talk about this defense, he talked about, very much like Clemson in terms of being athletic, being very long, Good length to them, and that's tough. I mean, their defensive ends are very good. They've been good in the secondary. And so it's really, really a legitimate challenge. And they're very multiple in what they like to do. Broncos very good with that. So I think if you look at where North Carolina has really had its problems, it's been inconsistency in the run game, and it's also been inconsistency, and this goes on both the offensive line and Sam Howell, and protecting the quarterback and the quarterback getting rid of the ball quickly. And I think this defense is better than Duke's last week, but what Longo has really stressed both weeks is, you know, when we're giving Howell the ball, we can't wait and see if the offensive line is going to hold up. We have to be ready to make our decisions and go quickly. He can't just hang on to it, because that's one of the reasons North Carolina has as many sacks as it's had. And a lot of those have been Howell's fault. He's just trying to buy time, trying to make things happen. And as he gets older, he'll get better, obviously. But right now, he's still struggling a little bit, knowing when to get rid of the ball. And so Virginia is going to put a lot of pressure on him. And if you can establish a run, and I think the offensive line has been doing better. That left guard spot still been a liability. Brian Anderson's been here and there. We'll have to see if Polino is able to play. That's certainly going to be a question mark. But if he can come in and play some guard, you would think that solidifies things pretty quickly. But that's the thing too. So you have to be really good up front. You have to be able to run the ball. North Carolina's had some good numbers, but a lot of the work of the running backs has been after contact, and that's a credit to Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, and even Antonio a little bit. But Carter and Javonte have just been great in terms of absorbing contact, breaking tackles, and just kind of moving the pile. And that's why North Carolina's had success. So if you can find some success running the ball, and if offensive line is effective enough there to buy Sam Howell some time to pass, I think there's enough plays there to be made. But what you cannot do is take those negative plays where you're playing from third and long, like we've seen so many times, and that's when North Carolina tends to get in trouble.
Jason, your take? I mean, Virginia's got 32 sacks, and if I'm looking at it correctly, they give up 3.1 yards a rush. They're going to be a stiff challenge for Sam Howell and this North Carolina offensive line. Polino plays or he doesn't. What's Carolina got to do? You know, start with us on first down, first and 10 from the 25. How does Carolina approach this Virginia defense, like Greg said, is opportunistic, and it'll put Carolina in way behind the chains, and that's been pretty much death on drives for North Carolina this season.
Yeah, it's some good questions there. First, I want to emphasize, I think this is probably the second best defense that North Carolina will have played this year behind Clemson. This is a really good defense, and they tackle well. They are physical. I mean, what they have basically taken on the persona of their coach, and Mendenhall is all about physicality, all about discipline. I mean, that's what he brings, and the defense matches his persona. It matches the kind of team that he wants to have. And, you know, they do some stuff. They're pretty multiple, like Greg said. And they're going to give you problems up front, because they're going to line up in some 3-4 stuff. They're going to line up in some even looks with a stand up. They're going to give you some. They're going to slant on you. They're going to do a lot of the same stuff that Wake Forest and App State did defensively. And I can, you know what? Even though it hasn't happened yet, I can hear all of the people listening to this podcast groaning, remembering what things looked like against App State and against Wake Forest. And that's what you're going to see Virginia doing in terms of defensively. That's kind of how they set up. And again, they don't have a bunch of guys that jump off the film at you in terms of that's a clear first round, second round pick, but they got a lot of length, like Greg said, and a lot of guys that are going to cause you some problems in terms of tackling. And one of the things that they do really well, you look at their first quarter yards per carry against them, 2.39 yards per carry against Virginia in the first quarter, and 2.56 in the fourth quarter. If you're going to get some rushing yards on them, generally it's been in the second and third quarter, which is a little bit of where, you know, especially second quarter, some of their depth they're not as deep as some of the the really true elite defensive teams on the are in the country. But to me, first of all, I think it's a big deal if Polino plays. If he can play and he can contribute, especially at guard, then that helps. And that provides some solidity. I think the guys that are playing left guard potentially have NFL futures, but they've still got some growth to do. This is one of those games where if you have a guy that's got the experience that can really make sure that you're solid at that spot, that can help. But if I'm Phil Longo, I'm coming into this game and I'm going to throw a little bit more on first down early, especially early in the game. This is where I might come out and instead of doing what they've done and trying to run the football in the second quarter and just kind of get to the fourth quarter against this team, I'm probing just a little bit to see if I can get a play against their secondary early. And they've done that against a couple teams so far this year. I mean, they did that against Miami. They did that against Virginia Tech, where they got a couple early throws where they created a matchup and were able to get a couple downfield throws for big plays and got leads in those games that ultimately, yeah, they evaporated in each of those games, but those leads allowed them to play very differently than they would have otherwise. I think that's exactly what I would try to do in this game. I would try to come into this game with some first down throws, some play action stuff to try to get after their secondary early on, see what matchup I really like. And odds are it's going to be Daz Newsome against one of the safeties. See if you can get some sort of pump and go or some sort of thing that's going to get him on the run and create an early play, because this is a game where I think points are going to be at a premium overall. And if you can get up by a touchdown or 10 points early in the game, then at that point you can start to sort of play your game and play from ahead and force them to actually do something other than just what they do on offense, you know, force them to get a little bit panicky eventually. And that can tilt the game in your favor. But to me, that's what I'm trying to do is I'm not likely, especially early in the game, maybe late in the game, once I've worn that defense down a little bit early in the game, I'm not expecting to get a bunch of 8 play drives against this team. This is a game where I'm coming in with 6-7 plays that I've really spent time on. I've had my quality control guys, my GAs, just checking, okay, what formation can I use? What tempo combined with formation can I use? Is there a trick play that I can use to get an early big play against their secondary so that I can get a little bit of padding and let my defense play from ahead? That's what I'm trying to do in this. And then I think late, if you're fresh, they have given up some rushing yards late in games at times. But like I said, this is a team, they're not easy to run against. They're going to give you a lot of the same problems that App did, that Wake did. And the best thing you can do is basically find some holes in that secondary, which, again, since their best corner and one of the best corners in the country is now out, that's really where you've got to target them.
Yeah, Tommy, to kind of illustrate Jason's point there, I mean, just look at the Duke game. I thought Duke had a very good defense. It's not like North Carolina's offense was great. I mean, the running backs did a good job. Sam Howell had one of his worst games as a whole that we've seen. Yet, what did he do? When the opportunities presented themselves, he made a perfect pass to Bo Corrales. He's kind of dropped it in the basket on that 29-yard touchdown pass. And then when another opportunity arose, he threw the 47-yarder. I mean, he averaged 22.7 yards per completion, and he only completed 10 passes. So he took advantage of those opportunities. And because he hit on those two big plays, I mean, North Carolina scored 20 points total. Because he had those two big plays, that was enough to get the job done. So, yeah, I mean, if you can just hit on a couple of those big plays, which North Carolina can do, and which Virginia struggles to do, that can flip the scale in your favor. Tommy, you mentioned the 32 sacks for Virginia. That is fourth nationally. North Carolina has allowed 27 sacks. That's 122nd nationally. So that certainly is going to be an area to watch.
So one other thing too, to add into this that I should mention, is that they've really had only two teams run the football well against him, and one was last week. So the first one is Notre Dame, and Notre Dame didn't run it well or against them early. It took Notre Dame like three quarters really to break them down. But last week, Louisville ran, they averaged 5.04 yards per carry, so over 5 yards a carry against Virginia, which happens to be quite convenient because that gives you all that film on what Louisville did in the running game to create some of those seams and all of that. And so that's the other thing, is I'm looking really closely, and I haven't had a chance to break that game down, but if I'm Phil Longo, I'm going back and I'm going, okay, what did they do? And I know Louisville is both very zone heavy. They run a lot of zone, a lot of outside zone, and they also run their quarterback a decent amount. So this is also a game where I would feel a lot better about doing this if I knew that that Reuter was ready to go. But this is a game where I think that there's a handful of plays. I think you probably want to give Sam Howell 5-6 carries in this game that are designed runs, especially early, just to force their defense to stay honest and get some easy, cheap yards against their defense the way that Louisville did. I mean, that's one of the things that they do, is that they use their quarterback a lot in the running game, and, you know, find a way to imitate what they did a little bit there and see if maybe you can get a couple plays, a couple additional things when, you know, it's third and four or something, and you run Howell and you get six, and that sustains a drive.
You make a lot of people nervous when you're talking about running Sam Howell on design runs, especially when Reuter's not 100% back. It'll be interesting to watch. I do think they need to mix it up a little bit, make them account for him. I remember we used to talk about the read option with Bren Renner, and it was like, well, what's the point? He's never going to keep it. And then he started keeping it a few times. It opened us up just a little bit more. Let me ask you both. I asked you, Greg, Virginia, they won at Pitt in August. But since then, they are undefeated at home and winless on the road. Is that a thing? I mean, this game's going to be in Keenan Stadium, and it's going to be nuts in Keenan Stadium. Carolina hadn't won them all in Keenan Stadium, but Virginia hadn't won one away since going to Pittsburgh August 31st.
Well, recently it's just been a matter of turnovers. And we talked about this. It's funny. This is the Coastal Division for you, I think, because you can really just look at turnovers and say, okay, well, this is why they lose at Notre Dame. And if you watch that game, Virginia probably should have won that game. But they just had a couple strip sacks late that really turned the tide. But they had a -4 turnover margin at Notre Dame and lost by 15. They lost the turnover battle at Miami. In Miami, they had chances to win that game and couldn't get it done. They actually won the turnover battle against Duke and blew Duke out 48-14. And then they lost the turnover margin by 2 at Louisville and lost by 7. So when Virginia plays clean, as good as they are special teams-wise with Joe Reed, as good as they are defensively, and they don't turn it over offensively, they're a handful. But if you can force some turnovers, then you can get some things working in your favor. And I think the other thing, too, worth noting here, Tommy, is when I talk about Virginia playing clean, if you look at their yards per play in all their games, they're dang consistent. Now, they're not explosive, but it's between 4 and 4.5 yards per play pretty much against every single opponent.
Which isn't very good.
Right, certainly not. But it's not one of these teams where, you know, it's 6.5 in this game, but it's 2.5 against this opponent. You know, they're consistent, but if they're taking care of the ball and they're playing good defense and they're doing what they've been doing on special teams, they're a handful to deal with. Are they great? No. Is anybody in the Coastal great? No. But you have to take advantage of your opportunities. And I think we said it last week. We'll say it again tonight. We'll say it for sure next week. That's just how this division's shaped up this year.
Yeah, just for perspective, if Virginia's offense were a defense in terms of yards per play allowed, they'd be the number 19 defense in the country against FBS competition. So that tells you about their offensive efficiency when it comes to yards per play. That's why they're ranked 112th in the country in yards per play against FBS competition. So that's not real good. The other thing that's worth noting here is last week we talked about how it was turnovers for Duke, and it mattered again this last week. But the thing that was correlated there is that if you could stop Duke's running game, then they would turn it over. That's what North Carolina did. Interesting thing with Virginia is that there's no correlation between the two, right? So with Duke, if you stop their run, then they're gonna make mistakes in the passing game. With Virginia, you can look at their average yards per carry, and it's not good pretty much against anybody. Now, Notre Dame, they average 0.14 yards per carry on 29 carries. That's not good. But against everybody else, I mean, it looks pretty similar. I mean, 3.75, 2.38, 2.39, 3.76, and 3.0. I mean, and half of those were wins and half of those were losses. Half of those, they had a bunch of turnovers, half they didn't. And it is totally not correlating with the yards per carry. What you do know is that you need to force them to throw it downfield, and they might turn it over, but it's not quite as well correlated in terms of situations and all of that as what it was with Duke.
In terms of, you know, kickoffs and this kind of thing, it's going to be very important for Jonathan Kim to do a good job kicking off, assuming he's still in that role, unless Cooper Graham is doing it. Just because when you look at where Virginia has a secret weapon, with Joe Reed, who's top in the country. I think he's averaging close to 38 yards per kick return. And that's why Virginia leads the country in kickoff returns. And so that's a guy that can make an explosive play. So those kickers, whether it's whoever they've got back there, Kim or Graham, they've got to do a better job of getting the ball in the end zone. And if they can do that and prevent him from having chances, that will certainly keep the coaching staff and the crowd breathing sighs of relief as often as that happens.
Yeah, that's big. Mike Brown's talked about special teams, specifically punts, but Joe Reed is a game changer, and in a tight game like this one could be, something like that could make all the difference in the world. That being said, let's move on to the prediction portion of the show. We've been decent lately. But Greg, I'm going to put you on the hot seat first. Carolina, Virginia, 7:30 in Kenan Stadium. It's going to be wild in there. It is a huge game for North Carolina football, a huge game with coastal implications. How's it turn out?
I think this is going to be a game that follows very closely to what we saw last week in terms of it being a defensive grudge match. I do think Bryce Perkins is a better quarterback than what Quentin Harris was. And so I've actually got Virginia winning this one. I think it's going to be a very good game, very competitive game, but I've got Virginia winning 21-17.
That was interesting. Jason, your take. I mean, last week, and I'll be honest to our listeners, all three of us really wanted to pick Duke to win that game.
No, none of us wanted to.
Well, we're really like, Duke's going to win. Pick Carolina anyway. And it worked out. So your thoughts on Virginia and Carolina, Jason?
This is another coin flip game. And I've gone back and forth on this ever since I started thinking about it. The thing to me that keeps coming back is that these games tend. So I've talked about this for multiple years now on this podcast. I always look at certain factors when I'm picking a game. I want to see who's going to win up front, who has the better quarterback, and if those things aren't determinative, which usually you can kind of decide on that, I want to look at a couple other factors and which team is more likely to get some big plays or turnovers, that sort of thing. And I look at this, and ultimately, I think both defensive lines are going to have an advantage in this game. I think points are going to be at a premium in this game because both teams are going to be able to limit the run a little bit. But I like Sam Howell better than I like Perkins, even though Perkins is a good player. I think there's a little bit of an edge there. And when it comes time to start thinking about, okay, which team is more likely to have that one or two plays that breaks this game open?
I think North Carolina is the more likely team to be able to pull off that couple big plays on the offensive side. I think they're roughly an equal likelihood in terms of turnovers. So I'm going to go with North Carolina to win this game. I'm going to go with them winning it close. I'm going to say North Carolina, man, I've been going back and forth on this score all day. I'm going to go say North Carolina 20-17, same as last week against Duke.
Well, Greg, yeah, he prices righted you on that one. I'm going to say, you know, this is one. This is probably one that I think I in the preseason I had Virginia winning it. And Jason, you made a good point there about who's got the more explosive players. Virginia's kick return specialist bothers me as far as picking North Carolina, but I'm gonna go Carolina. It's in Keenan Stadium. I mean, it's different this year. I said that in the first couple games of the season. It just seems different. I'm going to say Carolina 23, Virginia 16, minus any crazy pick six, scoop and score things. 23-16, Carolina. Greg, you're the outlier, but we'll let you own that one. We'll talk again soon, boys. It's been fun. Inside Carolina Game Plan Podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, on Halloween night, recording this, full of chocolate and other things. Jason and Greg, I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got him.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.